May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Cuke Audio Podcast, a Tassajara story. I'm D.C. Puba of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, preserving the legacy of Shunryu Suzuki and those whose paths cross his. And anything else that comes to mind? I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable, free from economic struggle, and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. So today we have one Tassajara story that's a little shorter than usual, but I'm involved with some stuff and got to get back to it. And that I've talked about before, you know, it's just the audiobook for Crooked Cucumber. I'm at the final stretch. So after our pause to meditate, we'll get right into it. So when you hear the bell, if you're of a mind, hit pause and meditate or whatever for as long as you want, and when you're through, hit unpause, and we'll be here to hit the bell to end the meditation or whatever, and we'll get right into the next Tassajara story. City. I had some urgent business that took me from Tassajara to San Francisco. I'd gotten a letter. It was the summer guest season, and I was running the dining room, but I had to go. Went straight to Suzuki and said I had to go, and I'd be back as soon as I could. He could see it was not negotiable and accepted it right off. Had more trouble with the director, but was adamant and with no explanation. Got a temporary room in the Page Street City Center. I'd be there a lot and gone some too. Was hanging out a good deal in the entryway with Bob, who'd been given the task of front door greeter, a role that did not exist before or after. He didn't seem to be able to focus consistently on mundane tasks and wasn't suitable material at the time for a stodgy position with normal responsibilities. He knew it, too. But Suzuki wanted him there in the building, and so did almost everyone else. He did go to Zazen and services and meals and was entertaining and insightful. I enjoyed watching him relate to those who came, would marvel at his ability to make someone feel welcome, and cringe at the way he'd toy with people's assumptions and identity. Sometimes it seemed as if how long a person stayed at the Zen Center was in inverse proportion to how determined they were when they arrived. If their investment in assumptions was stronger than their flexibility and openness. The doorbell rang. I answered it. A tall guy with a backpack and beard. He started to say something, but I interrupted him with, "Wait, you must speak first with the official greeter," and nodded toward Bob just inside in a chair behind a dark wood table. "How can I help you?" said Bob, matter-of-factly. The young man stood erect, with his heavy backpack still on. He spoke with serious precision and resolve. "I left MIT shortly before finishing work on a PhD in astrophysics. I have hitchhiked from Big Sur, where I've been camping for 3 months in the wilderness, living off the land, contemplating the course my life should take. Now I have arrived at this temple to end my wandering and devote myself to the study and practice of Zen Buddhism." Bob looked at him blankly. He tilted his head. "Oh, yeah?" he uttered. An empty pause, then Bob's mouth slowly opened. Top lip going one way, bottom one other. His head jerked back, tongue protruded, slobber dripped out. He started moaning and shaking, gurgling, grunting, head wobbling. His eyes rolled. His arms began making spastic motions. He fell to one side. The chair overturned. He lay on the floor, vibrating violently, wild eyes open, writhing, flopping about. I took the arm of the poor, perplexed guy and said, "Come with me," and walked him down the hall. Loring was just coming up the stairs from the basement. I asked him with a tone of subtle urgency to please take our visitor to the courtyard and speak with him. Loring is a generous, kind, and sympathetic listener with no dramatic flair. I went back to find Bob sitting at the desk, looking at the morning paper, as if nothing had happened. I took the section with the funnies and bridge column and sat in the chair next to him. Never saw that guy again. Jack Weller was the first person to stay in the building after the Zen Center had bought it in the early fall of 1969. He slept there all alone until Claude and Bob and then Nils moved in. He had some incense from Aheji. That first night, he walked around the whole building from room to room, sanctifying each with the smoke of the incense. Weller had made an impression on me in the spring of 67 when we met loading demolition debris into a pickup truck from behind the kitchen dining room, which became the Zendo. He was 21 or so and told me about how the year before he'd gone into a hospital for a routine test and was told he had to have immediate open-heart surgery. He said it didn't bother him till they described the procedure afterwards, sawing down the middle of his chest and cranking the rib cage open before getting to work with knives and so forth. Maybe that had something to do with him getting interested in practice. 50 years later, the neighborhood was scary back then, on the edge of the Fillmore, a high-crime area. After we moved in and things started getting gentrified for various reasons, it got less and less dangerous. A few people I knew were fairly fearless and would walk around that neighborhood anytime they felt like it. Bob, Reb, and Nils. At another point in his career, when Bob wasn't greeting people at the desk, he was doing high-rise ironwork. He'd walk a couple of blocks to a bus stop, saw the same hookers and shady guys when he stepped out of the bus around sunset, was casual with them, no problem. He knew how to hold himself. That iron work paid well. He'd get a check every 2 weeks. One day he cashed it on the way home, got out of the bus, and there were the same hookers and shady guys. One thing was different, though. Bob had a lot of cash in his jeans pocket. The guys could smell it and started walking toward him, calling out. They ran after him. As he ran up toward the Page Street building, he realized he'd left his key in another pair of pants. They were gaining on him. He ran up the steps and banged on the door, visualizing the vastness of that building and the possible whereabouts of his two roommates. By fortunate chance, Claude was standing by the door. He opened it. Bob thrust a wad of bills into Claude's hands, pulled the door quickly shut, again locking himself out. Turned around as two pursuers reached the bottom of the dozen steps, opened his arms, and once again fearless, spread his arms wide and called out a welcoming, "Brothers!" Chuck Hoy was sweeping the front steps. A young teenage girl across the street had put her radio in the second floor window, pointed out, and blasting into the neighborhood. She was boogieing and hollering out the window to the rhythm of the music. Suzuki happened to be in the city at this time, and he was in the front hall and stepped outside to see what was happening. Betsy Burgess was just walking up the steps. The student with the broom shook his head and said he couldn't see how to fit this into his practice. Suzuki laughed and roared up at the girl somewhat with the beat, spun around on his heels, and went back into the building. One day there was a young black kid outside with a gun that scared the heck out of some students. Bob went out to check, walked up to the kid, and took it from him. Then he saw it was a toy gun. Looked pretty real. Bob smashed it to pieces on the sidewalk. The kid cried. A small crowd gathered. Guns were a serious factor in the neighborhood, but opinion turned against Bob. Someone from the building gave the kid money to cover the destruction of his toy. The crowd dispersed. There was a sad guy while I was there who had wanted to live in the building and couldn't. He wasn't stable. We'd learned we weren't qualified to take on someone with mental problems. I'd talked to him some. Someone always had to be with him if he came by, listen to him and try to be sympathetic but firm. He told me he was going to go live in the woods and was all packed up and ready. The next day I was sitting at the desk while Bob was on a break. Bell rang. It was a plainclothes policeman. He said that a man had committed suicide a block away and asked if any of us might have known him. He warned me that to answer his questions, I'd have to look at a couple of unpleasant photos. I agreed. It was the same guy. The photos were two angles of him sitting in the driver's seat with a rifle in his mouth and blood, his car stuffed with camping gear. I answered the detective's questions. Bob came back and answered more. Nobody knew anything about the man except his first name. Later that day, someone confided in me that he was the last person in the building to see the guy, and that he'd yelled at him and told him to go away and not come back. It was not an easy trip to the city. I wasn't being loud and obnoxious, but my mind wasn't on Zen practice. After a few days, I was asked to find a place to stay outside the building. I agreed and understood. That was no problem. There were many apartments with good Zen friends in the neighborhood. The letter I'd received that precipitated my unexplained trip to the city had opened with, "Dear David, I'm pregnant. I know it. I knew it as soon as I woke up this morning." It was not from Diane. The letter came a week after I'd returned to Tassara from a quick trip to the city and back. I went right back there to the young woman who'd sent the letter. I liked her a lot and wanted to be there with her to deal with this. We both knew that we were not going to be a couple and that this was not the right time for her to have a child. I urged her to confide in female friends only and to stay away from Katagiri, whom I didn't trust in this matter. In my view, that life would return later when the timing was right. I stayed until she was no longer pregnant and said, "It's time for me to return to Tatsuhara." It was sad. This has been a Cuke Audio podcast, Tatsuhara Stories, with hardly any Tatsuhara story, me leaving, coming back.
There'll be some way. I want to include that in Tatsuhara Stories, because that's part of being a young person and living back then.
And I don't want to be part of the taboo against anyone getting an abortion in media. It's really something. Really, almost every woman I know had at least one abortion. So to pretend that it's not an acceptable part of life, or that, the only choice is to have the baby, I do not accept, and neither do most people. So I'm D.C. Puba of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sonora with Doggett, Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka. And we're wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.